Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Come on, Trey. Here go Mr. Chocolate. I like the way you break it down. Why the stack be watching me?
This is Soundcheck at 93.9 WNYC and WNYC.org. I'm John Schaefer. You know, when D4L sings about shaking that Laffy Taffy, I don't think they're talking about something you'll find in the candy store. But it is all over the radio, MTV, and on many teenagers' iPods. Since the days of Elvis Presley and his shaken hips, pop music has expressed sexuality. But according to my first guest today, it's leading some teens to sex at an earlier age. Dr. Jane Brown at the University of North Carolina led a study about sexual content in the media, TV, magazines, movies, and music, and how it predicts adolescent sexual behavior. She's here to share the findings. Dr. Brown, welcome.
Thank you.
So, haven't we heard this kind of thing forever? I mean, you know, in the days of Elvis Presley, people thought that he would corrupt the wholesome youth of America, and the Rolling Stones were going to turn your kids into acid-dropping, free-loving hippies. I mean, what's changed, if anything?
Well, the main thing that's changed is we now have a study that helps establish that we've probably been right. We really haven't had much research that has substantiated that, but this study begins to move us in that direction, that suggests that the more kids listen to this kind of music when they're 12 to 14, the more likely they are to have sexual intercourse by the time they're 16.
All right, now how was that study conducted?
We went and surveyed more than 1,000 12 to 14-year-olds in their homes. They filled out questionnaires on laptop computers so they could touch the screen with their answers, and the questions were read to them over headphones, so it was pretty confidential. And then we went back to them 2 years later and looked again at what media they were using as well as their sexual behavior.
Basically you're relying on the kids being honest with you, first of all.
Well, that's true. Mm-hmm. But this is probably the best way to get at that, if there's any way to get at it.
Right. What kind of demographics? I mean, did this cut across race, gender, and that sort of thing?
Yes, this was conducted with public school kids in three counties in central North Carolina. It's a pretty diverse sample, so it's we actually selected on this basis that there would be half black young people and half white, and male and female, and about a third of the kids in this sample are eligible for reduced fee lunches at school, which is one indicator of a lower socioeconomic status.
Mm-hmm. And did you find that their quote-unquote media diet was pretty standardized across the demographics?
No, that's really an interesting part of this, is that because there's so much media available to kids today, that kids have a wide variety of media diets. And so we were looking across these four media: music, magazines, movies, and television. And there's dramatic differences in what kids are selecting across those media.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. So are the black kids and white kids in the study listening to the same music and watching different TV shows? Were you able to break it down that specifically?
Yes, that's right. So we find really dramatic differences by gender and race, especially for television. So the black youth are finding the relatively few shows on television that feature black characters, and then large majorities of them watch those shows. But whites rarely watch those shows, and they're watching a very different kind of television.
Mm. What about music?
Well, music's a little more crossover. So blacks and whites still primarily listening to rap music, and then there's some breakdown by gender as well. So some of the top music artists we were looking at, we found, were primarily rap artists like Nelly, Ja Rule, Jay-Z, and Destiny's Child, which would probably be considered R&B.
Mm-hmm.
But then there was some country as well in our sample. So some of these kids were living in rural North Carolina, so they were interested in country music like Faith Hill, Dixie Chicks. And But mostly it's rap is the crossover music.
All right. So, Beyonce, for example, would have been, as much on the white kids' iPods as the black kids in this study. We're talking to Dr. Jane Brown at the University of North Carolina about a study about the sexual content in the media and how it predicts adolescent sexual behavior. And we'll continue our conversation in a moment, and we'll be opening up the phones to take your calls at 212-264-7483, 212-264-7483, asking if you think the media diet for kids is different today, and, how did your media diet when you were a teenager affect you? All of that coming up. Beyonce and Check Up On It. We're speaking with Dr. Jane Brown at the University of North Carolina about her study on the sexual content in the media, especially in music, television, movies, and how it predicts or affects adolescent sexual behavior. And Jane, listening to a song like this, I mean, if you read the lyrics on the page, it's more than a little suggestive, but as it goes by really fast in that kind of rhythmic cadence, I mean, are 12 to 14-year-olds listening that carefully and parsing every sentence to draw every last, double entendre out of it?
Well, what we know is that lyrics.com is one of the favorite websites of this age kid. And so they're, especially for their favorite music, they know what those lyrics are.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Well, now, whether they fully get the meaning of it, I don't know. But then we have music videos that often illustrate going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, now there's kind of a chicken and egg thing here. And, is it that those videos and lyrics are leading to the behavior, or is it kids who might be sort of predisposed towards that sort of thing are the ones who are actually going to lyrics.com to find out what the words are and are seeking out the videos?
I think it works both ways. I think what we're beginning to see is that as kids become more sexually mature, they're more interested in sex, and so they're looking around for, well, what does this mean? How do other people work with these feelings and so on? And the media provide that kind of information, and especially music that's very much about relationships, love, sex. And so music is a good place to learn more about, especially about the feelings around sexuality.
Well, now that doesn't seem like such a bad thing, though.
Well, I don't think that it's all bad at all. The problem I have with it is that often what we're seeing is one slice of sexuality, and I talk about it as there are some key elements missing. One is about waiting or abstinence, where you might actually wait to have sexual relationships, or what I call the three C's, commitment, contraceptives, or consequences.
Mm-hmm.
So these are rarely portrayed in the media our kids are listening to. And those are important elements when our kids do eventually become sexually active.
So in the conclusions of your study, where you did find that kids who start listening to this music at ages 12 to 14 are more likely to be sexually active, did you say at age 16? Went back to them?
That's right. We went back 2 years later. So some were 14 to 16, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Were you able to kind of determine whether one type of media was more influential than another? For example, music versus TV and movies.
Yeah, we found that music and movies had the strongest relationship with subsequent sexual behavior.
All right, I guess that's interesting. Magazines and print pretty much further on down the list then.
Yeah, because the magazines these kids were reading didn't have as much sexual content as the music they were listening to.
Right. Mm-hmm. All right. We're speaking with Dr. Jane Brown at the University of North Carolina and with our SoundCheck listeners on the phone and via email. Our number is 212-264-7483. 212-264-7483. 7483. And actually, Jane, we've gotten a number of emails already, and the emails seem to all be kind of variations on the theme that we were talking about a moment ago, the whole chicken and egg thing.
Right.
So let's see if we can get something from our listeners. We'll begin with Bob in New Jersey. Hi, Bob. Welcome to Soundcheck. Bob, are you there? All right. Bob, yes.
Yes.
Welcome to the program.
Thanks a lot for having me on. The reason why I wanted to call is I actually have a 12-year-old son that was suspended from school because he was walking around saying, "Bitches and hoe and suck my cock and Howard Stern and Baba Booey, y'all."
And, gee, they didn't like that in his school. So you're thinking that, Jane, this has got to be the kind of thing that you hear in the course of doing this research quite a bit. Jane?
Larry, that they might not learn otherwise.
I'm sorry, Jane. I'm going to have to ask you to repeat your answer because we lost you for a second there.
Okay, I'm saying that our kids are learning a vocabulary that they might not learn otherwise.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And vocabulary that sure, you know, is going to get your kids suspended from school, I suppose. But, you know, is that, can you lay the blame for that on songs when, you know, half of the older kids in the schoolyard are probably using that language?
Well, that's true. We've found in our study as well that what the perception that peers are also very important around early sexual behavior. And if a young person thinks that his or her peers are having sex, they're more likely to as well.
Well, and this is why I asked you before, you know, if your survey really was relying on the honesty of the participants, is, you know, if a 16 or a 15-year-old kid thinks that all of his or her peers are doing it,
yeah,
they're probably going to want to at least be able to write down, yeah, I'm doing it too, right? I mean, there is that kind of peer pressure too.
Yeah, that's true. Well, we asked them, both at time one and time two, and we also asked them a number of different ways in each survey about whether they'd had sex. So we asked it very technically one time and using some vernacular another time and so on. And our percentages of kids having sex are very similar to what we've seen in other national samples.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's take a call from a Mr. Cam joining us in New Rochelle. Welcome to the program.
Yes, good afternoon. This is very quaint after living in Europe for many years. I think we may be better off, though, because Europeans are not violent. There's no violent crime. The divorce rates are lower. The STD rates are lower. What else? I think I've gotten everything. And pregnancy rates are lower. And they're more sexually active than Americans. And I assume that means they also are more sexually active as teenagers or young adults. So as far as the sex is concerned, wouldn't we be better off? Although they don't use vulgar language, and neither do the adults. So that's a different issue.
Mm-hmm. Wouldn't we be better off what?
Having sex before marriage, as opposed to what the president says, and then we'd be more civilized, more loving, lower divorce rates, all those good things, more sense of community.
Hmm.
That'd be, you know, be it a chicken and egg, whichever, but it certainly seems to be, there's a cause and effect there.
All right. Jane, there's a lot in what he says. I mean, you know, certainly if you go to a soccer game in Europe, you will, in fact, hear very vulgar language. But but the fact is, you know, Europe, many countries in Europe have a much more open policy towards sexual imagery.
Right.
On daytime and primetime TV, for example.
Right, but what they have that we don't have is good sex education from kindergarten through high school. And they also have access to health services. They also just have a very different sense of adolescent sexuality, as the caller suggests, is that they think that human beings are by nature sexual,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of a, wow, yeah, we are.
Well, duh.
Duh. And so what they do is help kids know that, but also that they need to take responsibility when they are sexually active. And so, in fact, young people in Europe start sex later, and when they do have sex, they use contraceptives.
Mm-hmm. So several of your three C's are in use there.
That's
in Europe.
Exactly right. Yeah.
What were the three again? It was
Commitment, contraceptives, and consequences.
Consequences, okay.
Right.
Dr. Jane Brown is researching the sexual content of the media and how it affects adolescent sexual behavior. We have an email from Andrew at the College of Physicians and Surgeons here in New York at Columbia University. He writes, I remember watching Immortal Beloved, you know, the movie about Beethoven, and young ladies were denied Beethoven's performances because of their sensuality. So maybe this is not a new phenomenon. And I mean, I think, Jane, you'd have to agree, it's not a new phenomenon. But as you mentioned earlier, what is new is what? The fact that we now have a way to measure what's going
on?
Yes,
and it is, I think, more explicit in some music genres, and especially with music videos, it's increasingly visual now, and so it's not only left to your imagination, but it's shown to you.
Right.
And so it becomes perhaps more powerful than it has been.
All right, we're going to go back to the phones in a moment, but first, you know, if it seems like they're starting off younger than ever, well, just listen to Lil Bow Wow, who recorded this song when he was 13. And talks about, you know, when I get older, I'm going to be surrounded by hoes and that sort of thing. I mean, yeah, they're starting younger. Here's Lil Bow Wow.
Around here we pop them cops. Around here we get them dots. Every girl I see that look right like me just got hot. This kid here all about stacking up. Saw a big hit, but we can back it up. Long as everybody get crunk when they drop in the club, start acting up. I represent the S-O-S-O-E-E-F-M-O-B.
All right, that's Lil Bow Wow and Bounce With Me. And, you know, Jane, if I weren't following along with the lyrics printed out on a piece of paper, I wouldn't be getting 90% of what he's saying there. But now, he's a boy. I mean, literally, he's like 13, so he's a boy. Are boys more likely to be influenced by sexually suggestive lyrics than girls? Did you see that kind of a breakdown in your study?
Yes, we did, actually. Especially the white boys were the most, the relationship with their early use of the media, of their music, and their sexual behavior, was the strongest relationship for white boys.
Mm-hmm. Let's move on to the phones again. Rod, joining us here in Manhattan. Rod is, I understand, the president of an independent record label. Is that right?
Yes, I am. I am the president of Verdict Records here in New York. I'm also a songwriter and keyboard player, producer, arranger, blah, blah, blah.
All right. That's a lot of blah blahs. What do you?
First of all, I just want to say that I love Soundcheck. I listen to Soundcheck almost every day.
Thanks, Rod.
Yeah.
You have a question?
One of the things that I think about when I'm listening to this segment, especially being a label president and working on that level, what pains me is that the music industry in general, and it's not just music, it's lots of different media industries, but music is, the industry is not really concerned about or taking the responsibility for the product that they release. And it basically just boils down to money. So they're going to do and create and promote whatever they can in order to make money and not realize that whatever they're releasing is going to have an impact on society and especially on children.
So, I mean, Rod, when you're making a decision on whether to sign a band or release a record, I mean, will lyric content affect your decision?
That's one of them, yeah. Yeah,
okay.
There are certain things that I just won't. And again, I'm not necessarily talking about censorship. Everybody can do whatever they want to do. But for me and for my company, there are certain things that I won't release. I won't release anything that's sexual or degrading or anything like that.
All right, those are two different things, sexual and degrading.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of hard to do any sort of music these days that doesn't, or any, in any phase of our history as a species that doesn't at some point relate to, you know, sex.
Well, it's one thing to relate to it.
Yeah.
It's another thing to just be flagrant about it for the sake of selling something.
Right.
In other words, it's rapidly becoming, and especially, I can say this particularly in R&B because musically that's the kind of music that I write, in R&B, it seems like it's becoming so sexual that it's really not music anymore. It's a bunch of riffs and rhythms and things to perpetuate whatever their sexual message is in order to sell the CD and make money.
All right. Well, Rod brings up an interesting point, which is sort of using sex as a marketing tool almost. And we have an email that sort of follows up on that from Marianne, who writes, I have concerns about gender issues in the sense of how treatment of women and girls is in the music, also in TV and in commercials, she writes, but most often as an object.
Mm.
Now, you mentioned, Jane, the difference between boys and girls and how they react.
Mm-hmm.
What is the reaction, as you see it, of girls to this sort of objectification of women in music and music videos?
I think it's a very strange time, actually. As a second wave feminist, I find my daughter not as concerned about these images as I am.
Mm.
I have a 15-year-old, and her cohort seems less upset about this than I wish they were. I think the images, as the writer suggests, have become as degrading as they ever were, if not more degrading, and more objectification of women's bodies than ever. So I'm concerned about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Jane, I also have a 15-year-old daughter who seems to be equally blasé about the whole thing. So I don't know.
Yeah.
It's great that we have this study, but I suspect this is a conversation that people will continue to be having for a long time to come. Dr. Jane Brown is the lead researcher in this study of sexual content in the media and how it affects adolescent sexual behavior. She joined us from the School of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Jane, thanks so much for being with us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Up next, one man who's been reissuing and remixing vintage Passover songs from the 1950s and 60s, and then later a new opera that reimagines the Saga of Moses by setting it at least partially in modern-day Brooklyn and featuring the role of Moses performed by a dancer. This is Soundcheck.
Cheat on your man, man, that's how you get a his head. Killer with the B, I know killers in the street with the steel to make you feel like chinchilla in the heat. So don't try to run up on...